Hey friends, thanks for listening to the Axiom podcast. We're a community centered around experiencing Jesus together and practicing his ways as a community. We like to say in Peoria as it is in heaven. So this podcast is just space for discussion and exploring ideas and principles of the kingdom, and also where we post our sermons from Sunday gatherings. So please engage us online, and hope you enjoy this episode.
All right. Hey, guys. This is Gavin here in the sound booth via Axiom, and I'm sitting here with a couple buds. If you guys want to say hi, introduce yourself.
Yeah. My name's Uriah. I got connected with these guys through a few other people that I know, and I'm attending Axiom right now, but I'm also doing a lot of work in the music industry, and here I am now doing a podcast.
Yep, and I'm Micah, here as always.
As always, faithful, sturdy, and true. So here's the deal. We've been discussing Jesus 2020, the year of the Lamb, and inviting people to live the kingdom life, the life in which Christ is put on display for us and invited us to enter into. And it's been a good series. We've had a lot of fun talking about it. So we want to do a little bit of like review on that as usual, and engage some of your guys' thoughts. I had a few people hit me up post-service with, you know, stuff. And so, hey, this is for the community, so we want to address those things. But also we want to spend some time just hearing Uriah from you and a little bit on your story, your journey, and what you're up to next, because we just find you fascinating. And yeah, so we talked about this issue of anger and contempt and the kingdom way. I don't know. I could review, but I gave the sermon, you know, so you guys going to have to help me out a little bit here.
Yeah, I mean, what I love about the Sermon on the Mount is you don't have to do much. Jesus carries a lot of the work in how transformative these passages are. And again, he's taken something that was a transactional, surface level, behavioral standard, and he's navigating you now towards the heart issue, which is what you were talking about. Of just, this is really all about what's in your heart, and what is it that's causing, why is anger holding us all captive?
Yeah. Imagine like having this mentality. It's like, well, I haven't killed anyone, so, you know, I'm within the law, I guess. I'm experiencing the life. And of course, Jesus pushes back on that, and it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I feel like, just thinking about that message, specifically with Jesus's, the statement he was trying to make, I feel like he definitely, like, set the bar high. Like you said, getting to the root of the issue, but it's like, how do I put this? So I feel like Jesus is like a walking dichotomy sometimes, a living dichotomy where he's like, it's about faith, but guess what? It's about also about like what you do in this life here and now. It's about trusting me, but there's also action and all these different things. And I feel like when he talked about this, it just clearly rang like, hey, what you do in this life matters, and how you treat others is it has implications in the spiritual. And yeah,
that's good. It does. And one of the things that I was thought would be fun to explore with you guys a little bit, so I'll just propose this out as a question, even though I have thoughts on it myself. But I didn't have a chance to speak to what is like appropriate anger look like. You know, we talked a lot about like anger and what anger can lead to, and how it's sort of a neighbor to sin, if you will. But is there such thing as appropriate anger beyond just like, you know, natural anger? I mean, there's nothing wrong with just, you know, I got upset. But but talk to me, what does anger in action look like if it's appropriate? Or is that even a category? Is there an appropriate category for that?
Yeah. I liked, you did say that at some point you mentioned, it's not, I'm not saying that it's wrong to be angry, because you can't, something's instinctual. It's literally a part of our physiology of just being angry. It's a reaction to something, but it's what do you do with that reaction? How do you, does it hold you captive? Like we talked about before, it's just, to me, it's because the whole thing is about this opportunity of how to live in the kingdom. And so Jesus is presenting in a scenario where more and more, as you live more into the kingdom, you can experience less anger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like before I can like clearly answer that question, I think we have to acknowledge the fact that there's subtext to the language we're using. So when I, for example, when I say God, there's a subtext of an old white male that usually pops up in people's heads. And I think the same with anger. There's like subtext of what that looks like. And our subtext is not very healthy. So to like strip that away and look at what Jesus was saying, I think also requires looking at the context and subtext of what he was saying. Mm-hmm. Not to throw out more X's. But I feel like I did a study on this a little while ago, and I was trying to figure this out too. I'm like, okay, so Jesus talks about like turning the other cheek and forgiving and all these different things. I've seen nothing but unhealthy models of what it looks like to forgive and not give in to anger, almost like you just forget it ever existed.
And that's a other kind of legalism potentially too, right?
Like, yeah,
I've seen somebody who's like, Jesus, don't go to court, so I'm just going to let you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's actually a legalism, right?
Well, because it's just as unhealthy to not be honest with yourself and squash or make it seem like you're not angry when you really are.
Because now you're doing that. You're not really doing it. You're trying to do it because you think that's what you're supposed to do. And it's not, but your heart and your mind haven't gone there yet. You know, they're only going there because you feel like you have to.
Well, and I mean, yeah, there's righteous anger. Like, how can you not get angry about injustice and things like that exist in our reality? I think God's invitation is to cast that to him, to say, God, I'm angry about this, but to direct, he can take that anger. He can handle that anger from us.
It's funny you say that, because the study I was talking about, that I was looking into about like anger and forgiveness, it doesn't say anything about like tossing out anger. Jesus, I forgot the actual word that's broken down into in the Greek, but essentially what he means is not taking hold of the person. And so from what I know in those communities, what they do is they as a collective grab the person, take them to authorities, and let the process happen, and them all as witnesses take part in it. But Jesus, in the actual word, when he talks about forgiveness and letting go, he's talking about letting go of like the person, almost. That's something I've been looking into, and it's almost like he's like, no, it's not wrong that you're angry, but I'm telling you there's a new way of doing things, and it's not trying to bring judgment to that person's life, where it should be, where you feel justice should be done.
Yeah, and I also think it's going back to this original issue of sort of transcending the righteousness of the Pharisees, which was they were doing that, grabbing hold of people and bringing them before the courts as way really to pronounce their own righteousness, right? They're the ones who have decided that you're guilty, and they have appropriately dispensed their anger, and it's good. And Jesus is, you know, he's like questioning all of that. He's saying, yeah, you're just, you know, tying grapes to apple trees and like calling it fruit. Like that's not what his kingdom or his way of the lamb really is. And so, and I want to say, like, you know, anger, if it's an intuitive thing, right? This idea of anger being that anytime your will is obstructed in any way, you feel something automatically. Even if someone walks in the room that you just triggers a thought or whatever it is, there's an obstruction there, and that produces the hormones and the feelings that are associated with anger. And what do we do with that, you know? And so,
yeah, I think of my 3-year-old son and his inability to express his anger. He just, certain things make him angry, and there's nothing wrong with that. But
my kids are totally able to express their anger.
Well, but his inability to maybe articulate his anger, and I think that's what could be a part of the journey as well, is just as we learn more, as we do more of the inward work, we learn more about, oh, why does that make me angry? And we learn how to articulate our anger more and more. And that's the journey Jesus takes us on and invites us on inwardly. And so it's like with my son, it's like as he learns how to say, oh, I'm angry about that because, or this or that, then that gives him more of a mechanism and an ability to work through that, you know?
Yeah. I think you just reminded me that I was like way off track talking about forgiveness before we even talked about anger.
No, you're good. Well, but okay, but maybe you're not, right? Like,
no.
Like, to be able to forgive in the midst of your anger, is that possible?
It's hard going through the Sermon on the Mount one week by week because this was a 10-minute lecture. And it was meant to be all together. We should almost read through the entire Sermon on the Mount every week.
Yeah. It was Jesus' homily. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I don't think your head, I mean, even in the text itself, like before you go to the altar, right? Go and make it right with your brother, right? And so Jesus is inviting us to reconciliation with wherever our offenses are. You know, if someone has offended you, go to them. Which that idea is like, that's not even like just you dealing with your anger. That's you absolving someone else's anger, right? And it's meaning that if you're going to be light, if we're going to bear the gospel into ordinary contexts of the world, then we have to learn how to absorb others' anger through noticing their frustration and bringing about de-escalation and forgiveness and reconciliation to people.
Yeah. As you're talking, I'm just thinking about like all of the advice my therapist gives me about anger and how to manage that. It's almost like, and I think the best way I heard it described is like learning a new language and not like defaulting to anger or outbursts or however that looks for you guys. For everyone, I mean. Yeah. But like learning how to like, it literally feels like speaking a new language where you're just trying, you're looking like an idiot sometimes, but it's the trying, I think, that I feel like the teachings of Jesus and the kingdom come into play.
Yeah, and I think you're hitting a practical note too, this idea of like, okay, so let's say I struggle with this. I need to keep working on it. I need to keep this isn't like Jesus saying, "Hey, go figure this out in perfection." That would be again some kind of legalism. But I think in the kingdom, I believe that our responsibility is to keep trying. But when we fall down, we have to sit there and go, "Okay, so why did I fall? What caused me to stumble here and address that and then try again?" You know, so there's a thoughtfulness that is practical that Jesus is inviting us into as well.
I just think about like, so for me, I'm a nerd with like psychology and neuroscience whenever I can be, or find a good book and talk with someone. But I just think about like all of these teachings of Jesus, and I can't help but think like how contrary it is to like our hardwiring and the way our brains work, and the way our brains, you know, label hostility or get defensive and fall into fight or flight. Jesus is talking about like working against all of that. And I think like that could even be labeled as like the flesh he was talking about.
Yeah.
Like it's a literal chemistry. and it's a part of being human that you can tangibly see. Yeah. But it's just amazing to think of like how opposite the kingdom is to like our natural tendencies.
Yeah, that's good. It's good. Right on. Well, hey, as much as we love to talk about this, we want to hear your guys' thoughts and input, of course, and we appreciate all of you who have spoken up or pulled us aside to talk about these things, but feel free to engage us online, on email, or just in person, of course, too, or maybe you've got topic suggestions or things like that, so just bring it up, let us know, we want to engage you on that. So, Uriah, give us some context here for you. You are embarking on a new season of life, and this season has at the crossroads Axiom, among other spaces and people.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, give us a sense of where you are.
Okay, so I guess I'll go a little bit back just to fully give a better picture of what that looks like where I'm at now. Sorry. So for me, I've been working in the music. Oof.
And some Casa de Falafel.
Dude, that shawarma is hidden good. So I've been working in the music industry for like about 9 years. Doing a lot of volunteering, obviously, in the beginning, because that's like what the music industry is. Until I got good enough to get paid for what I do.
And what kind of work did you do? Or do you do?
I did production.
Okay.
So, okay. Full disclosure. I was making instrumentals for rappers. It was a good time for when it was, but I eventually realized there were other lanes to work out of and work in, so I started learning more about like engineering and mixing and recording and all these different things, and even songwriting. But at the same time, I also felt like this burden for this. I felt this burden to see like a spiritual light put in places where they don't exist. For some people, that was my initial thought. And so I'd spent years trying to figure out how to combine like my spiritual life and what I was doing in the music industry, and to see what it looked like to have those two married together. The more I learned about the music industry and the technical side of things, at the same time I was learning more about myself and learning more about like spirituality and my walk in following Jesus and how different that is compared to what I was raised with. So I feel even the idea of like me bringing a light, a spiritual light in a dark place, has changed. Similar to the conversation we had before, where I feel like God, creator, Deyin, which is what we call him in Navajo, is everywhere. And I feel like I'm just joining along with whatever God's doing. And that's brought up some new steps that are coming up here soon, where I'm going to be doing essentially like serving and supporting and sponsoring the creative community on the Navajo Reservation.
So, yeah. So how many people have you brought to Jesus in the last 2 weeks? I'm kidding, man. Hey, here's what I'm hearing, and guys, just for context again, Uriah is doing something really radical. He has decided to bear witness to Christ in a way that is not what we would typically think about when we think of missionaries. You are essentially attempting to create some culture and out of that grow a community where you can establish the kind of space necessary for being light, if you will. But the way we're light isn't just preaching at people or talking to people. It's far much more than that, and I know you get that. And so tell us a little bit about like what you're going to be doing and participating in, assuming the sky's the limit and you're able to go do exactly what God's invited you to do.
Okay. So I feel like what I want to do on the reservation is a lot different than even missions. I feel like it's bigger than that. And I feel like the word missions doesn't really encapsulate like what I feel God wants to happen on the reservation. Because when I think of missions, I think of like conversion, numbers, you know, attendance.
What do Navajo think of when they think of missions?
Now that that's some muddy water because, okay. So maybe I should give a little bit about like my story.
Sorry, I keep cutting you off.
No, it's fine. Maybe I should tell a little bit about my story,
yeah.
You think?
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So I was raised in a Christian evangelical household. And more than that, my dad was literally the pastor. And my mom worked in ministry. And
PK?
PK. There we go. PK all day. as intense as that was, I feel like I still had like a healthy upbringing, not really a lot of crazy stuff going on. But I also, being Navajo, had like a disposition with a lot of the places that I would live when I moved from the reservation to other places. So I did grow up on the Navajo Nation, but eventually, because of my dad's work, we moved all over the United States. For me, though, I recognized that disposition really quick. Especially when I tried to find community, when I tried to find connection with people, there was just this narrative of, like, that part of yourself, the native part of yourself is not something you need to be, you know, lifting up. It's not something that you need to be, you know, highlighting. Just be a believer, be a Christian. And that was, in some ways it was damaging. But that was like my first introduction to faith and what faith should look like. And that shaped a lot of who I was. It shaped a lot of what I did and what I thought of God. And what I thought of faith, but it wasn't until I grew older and like interacted with more communities, learned more about myself, learned more about the world, and I felt like, fast forward like a few years, it was like that idea that I grew up with morphed into something super unhealthy, and it created some hostility like within myself. Where I didn't necessarily value being Native, I didn't like it. I didn't even want it, to be honest. And it wasn't until like later on down the road after that I realized this narrative is very common on the reservation, where like a lot of Navajos are forced to choose between their faith or their culture, and they can't have the two married together, and my upbringing was found in that first category. I found my identity in my faith, in my religious community. And I just separated myself from my culture. And it became really unhealthy to the point where I was even wrestling with like mental health issues and suicidal depression and all these different things that came up and morphed from, I guess, that foundation that I define faith as. But also, like a lot of people on the reservation, I had just this disillusionment with Christianity to the point where I was just like, I'm done with all of this. Like, I don't care about any of it. If God is real, then he'll do this and he'll do that and da-da-da-da. And I had some pretty crazy experiences that I can tell you guys if you want, but long story short, I found what it meant to follow Jesus inside culture. I found what it meant to follow Jesus outside of any religious category, and it's been Yeah.
Yeah, which is great, man. Like this idea that you can experience Jesus and follow him in the midst of your cultural upbringing.
Yeah.
It doesn't just have to be in a sort of modern Christian setting, if you will, but mm-hmm. like we really can radically follow Christ. And learning how to do that is somehow a way of reconciliation with where God started you with, right? Mm-hmm. And so there's this beautiful migration that you've experienced, right, where you've left home, and now Christ is taking you back, but he's taking you back to it in a way you could have never experienced before, right?
Yeah, literally, like, I feel like I've experienced more faith in the past few years of my life than the rest of it, living out my quote-unquote Christian faith and learning apologetics and learning how to dissect the Bible and all these different things. It's like, I feel like life, I guess is the best way to explain it. But when you go to the reservation and you like talk about the gospel, when you talk about Jesus, there is baggage out the wazoo.
Yeah.
And that's the baggage I had to shed on my own in my own personal journey without any understanding that this is like a big narrative that happens with Native people.
But this is where you don't have to just go back and, quote, share Jesus like in an evangelistic way. You get to go back and be Jesus.
Exactly.
And embody the Christ life. And
yeah.
So I love that when you're calling it life.
It's literally the best way I can describe it. I feel like it's just new life that's been brought up in me. And this new life I want to share with other people. I want them to realize that they don't have to give up. When I go back to the reservation, I just want people to realize they don't have to give up faith to hold on to their culture. And they don't have to give up culture to hold on to their faith. There's a new expression that's unique to each and every individual that I feel Jesus is very much walking with and already working with on people. And mm-hmm. I just want to join alongside that work.
Yeah, when we follow Jesus, it can't help but manifest itself in an organic, authentic way, because that's how Jesus, we talked about earlier, that's how he did it. He just lived life, and he lived the truest life you can live and revealed that. And wherever there is truth, there's Jesus, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you know, you talked a little bit about, like, I'm just going to go up there and just live like Jesus.
Yeah.
And it's this mentality of doing it with him, not Uriah's going up to save the people, you know? It's this, no, like, Jesus is just inviting you to join him in this, mm-hmm. This super exciting invitation, because there's a bunch of people that he really loves and wants to reveal his kingdom to.
And you can learn and experience Jesus in them.
I was going to say, mm-hmm. You're probably going to be transformed.
You're going to get more Jesus than we are here in Peoria in some cases, right? Like that's real. Like when we displace ourselves, right?
Yeah.
We immerse ourselves into the flow of the kingdom, and now we see, you know. And it's when we refuse to step out of our comfort zone that the light gets dim. And I'm not saying that we all have to go live radical lives or do these things, but all of our boundaries are perpetually placed at the opportunity of being stretched, at the opportunity of being fulfilled. And so
we're finding that to be true here in this neighborhood in Peoria, as we stepped outside of our comfort zone a little bit and went into an area that where instead of going where we sense you're supposed to go, I'm quoting or doing air quotes. Yeah. But instead we just felt called to this neighborhood, and the neighborhood itself is more transformative to us than we probably are necessarily to them. It's like, you know, we have a family that lives right, that we share a fence with, that they are a blessing to us.
Seriously.
As much as we could ever try to say we're a blessing to them. It's more so how they are, their presence in our lives is forming us as a community. Hmm. And that's the invitation, I think, too.
I think you use the right word, too, community. I feel like the power of community is kingdom. The power of community is God working and speaking. And this is just my theory, but I feel like when you're interacting with other people, when you're learning, when you're connecting, there's a part of God that's revealed, and it's beautiful, and it changes. It changes you. Yeah.
So what's your, you know, you're hoping to relocate, right, back to the reservation?
Yeah.
And what would life look like for you there?
Hmm. So right now I'm talking to friends and family and connections I have on the reservation, and I feel like the more I learn, the more I realize it's going to look different than any plan that I have in my head. And I feel like it's going to be bigger than what I originally thought it would be, but at the same time, it's going to, I'm hoping that it continues on this track, because like you said, it's going to be transformative, and God knows it's going to shape me and change me. But in my mind, life on the reservation looks like me, stepping into the community that I'm originally from, opening up a space where creatives can create, where they can produce art, where they can distribute art in a safe setting without any restrictions, without any, you know, pre-existing narratives of how they should make art and what they should do, and just support them. Support them, love them, essentially be Jesus to them. And say, hey, I want to come alongside and promote and sponsor and preserve what you guys are doing. And let the spiritual life come from that, and the spiritual life come from the interaction, and like we said, the community of what's going to be developed there. And let God, through community, through human interaction, through spiritual conversation, through just life together, see what develops.
It's awesome, man. So our affection for our church always is to just cheer each other on. And you're right, you got to know from us, like, we're resonating with you and with what you're doing. We've deeply been encouraged by your presence with us. Selfishly hope that, you know, you stick around for a little bit. But that being said, like, obviously we want to be behind you in some ways and encourage you. And so
I appreciate that.
If you're out there and like maybe you've got questions, or like you're finding yourself going, man, I want to pick your eyes brain a little bit about this, or I've got ideas, or I've got tangibles that I could offer, please reach out. Don't hesitate. Or maybe you just want to like give to this, and we want to be a generous church, and we want to call everybody listening here to be generous people, and every opportunity you get to do what you can. That doesn't mean it's a lot. You just do what you can.
Because so you are raising support for this right now, right?
I am, yes.
Well, I'm trying to raise it for you right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll cut you your percentage after this.
Yeah, let me know that.
Just and you were telling us you have a little ways to go.
Oh, yeah. So. I got a lot of ways to go, actually. This is, even this whole idea of like coordinating efforts, and possibly starting in my own organization, like the fundraising aspect has been the hardest part for me to learn. But right now I'm sitting at like, I want to say, yeah, like 20%, 21%. But yeah, there's still a ways to go. There's still more partners that need to be developed and people who coincide with this mission that I need to come alongside with me and help me get there.
Yeah, man, and if you're listening right now, guys, pray for Uriah, pray for his family, and the work that they're desiring to do, and then I just invite you to turn your ear then to Jesus and see what how he's asking you to respond, even if that's just a social media hug, whatever it is, follow through with that prompting, follow through with that invitation, yeah. So.
Yeah, this is such a natural overlap of hearts, I feel like, and vision.
Seriously.
With how we just have, how Jesus has been leading us to go about life in community and in this, our whatever our context is. There's such an overlap of just wanting to nurture and celebrate the artists and nurture creativity. And because when you just make space for it, the work takes care of itself because it's such a life-giving space.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to see that happen up where you're going.
Seriously. I mean, we keep saying it, but I keep feeling like this deep resonation with what you guys are doing. And it's like when I look at the impact you guys are having on the community and the elements that you guys carry with you when you serve people, I'm like, this is exactly, like, if not just overlapping, like, this is exactly what I'm trying to do. Yeah. And I love what you guys are doing, and I love the fact that you guys are, like, with me in this.
Yeah. If we can be anything, it hopefully can just be, a resource, but also just a partner journeying in the same space.
Yeah.
A spiritual homie.
Yeah. Mm.
Straight up.
Yeah. Cool. Well, to just as a reminder on a different note here to everybody out there, we this coming Saturday are hosting our second Saturday here in Old Town Peoria. And, of course, what we've been talking about this entire episode really gets to come into play with you guys by being present here and celebrating the arts. And what I mean by that is go sit and absorb the music. Mm-hmm. Go visualize the artist, visit Iron Key, buy tickets for the restaurant, like get involved in the process and be a present person to what's happening down here. You guys have been doing great with this, by the way, but so looking forward to Saturday night, of course.
Yeah, we got Raquel Denis headlining and playing.
Oh, nice.
And she spoke and performed at the Makers and Mystics podcast that we hosted here.
Yeah.
So she's back. She's doing a whole set.
Maybe we could drop a single online or something.
I know Raquel.
Yeah, she's amazing.
She's awesome.
It's going to be an amazing music as always and everything, the whole experience. That's from 4:30 to 8:30 p.m. So come early. Yeah. I recommend that.
Yeah, and if you want to read ahead, of course, for Jesus 2020, we're just in the next couple of verses there. Yeah. Matthew chapter 5, so jump in on that. I think the topic is lust and the heart and adultery and all that.
All that fun stuff.
It'll be good.
The light stuff.
Yeah, it'll be an easy one. So see you guys this weekend, if not sooner. And again, don't forget, let's be praying for Uriah, guys. Take care.